But yeah, thank you for asking about the social political conditions of my family's story, because that was really important to me in making this film. I thought very carefully about balancing the personal and the public. I know the personal is political. Our personal lives are deeply framed and informed by larger social political conditions, currents, and ideas. And the exercise of power in the moment that we're living in, and the which then determines the opportunities that we have and the privileges that we might take advantage of. So my father was a member of the Korean Counterintelligence Corporation, the KCIC, and he joined the army in 1961 when Park Chung-hee seized power with a military coup. So Syngman Rhee had been an authoritarian leader until 1960, and then he was overthrown by student demonstrators. And for about a year, Korea was in upheaval, and there was no sense of where the power would land. But Park Chung-hee rose into that place and then set up a military dictatorship that lasted until his own assassination in 1979. So when Park Chung-hee seized power, one of the first things that he did was introduced a new spy agency, the Korean Central Intelligence Agency, KCIA. So in 1961, there were two agencies, KCIC, KCIA, and they worked hand in hand. They were parallel organizations. And KCIC was in the army tasked with monitoring national security through the army and spy activities. And KCIA was civilian and monitoring people's activities. Yes. So my father occupied a position of power, and he was trained and promoted and celebrated for an exercise of dominance and violence and abuse of power that was synonymous with how the dictatorship secured control and established a society that was deeply militaristic. It is still today, and also deeply anti-communist, which is still today. And the reality of Korea's contemporary complexities is that there were a series of military dictatorships from the very first Syngman Rhee to Park Chung-hee to Chun Doo-hwan, who really established the foundational security premise from which today Korea today continues to draw from. And Korea is a very complex democracy today. However, the roots of the militaristic, dictatorial, authoritarian regimes that establish the Korea we know today are very much activated and very much engaged. So that Park Geun-hye, who was the president, two presidents ago, was the daughter of Park Chung-hee. So the those politics are very much alive. And I often thought of the maxim that the past is in the present when I was making this film. When people like my father are trained to perform a function of militaristic, control and dominance and repression in the public arena, those individuals carry out that kind of violence in the intimacies of their homes. And I felt that it was really something we all kind of know, but we don't often have a disclosure or an in-depth consideration of what it is like to live in the families and be part of a family in which your father, the patriarch, is part of the perpetrator's activities in a social order that is deeply fascist.
Finally, the film starts and finishes with footage of a shamanistic ritual or ceremony in which I believe your mother was represented by a picture. Can you explain the meaning of that and why you decided to do that in real life?
Well, I was very drawn to thinking about the question of how does one heal from an interrupted life? And shamans and mudangs in Korea, they offer an opportunity for loved ones to access a communication of a sort with ancestors who have passed. And the very specific kut that the mudang performed in the film was a kut, like a ceremony, a ritual. The very specific kut was one that is conducted for ancestors who have died in a difficult way. So I thought to myself, anything is possible. I'm not here to rule out whether or not you can commune with a deceased ancestor. All the scientific, rational things I believe and think I know in this world, they exist in my heart and also in my experience, alongside many inexpressible, unverifiable, sometimes mysterious things and spirits and energies. So I have to say that my decision to seek a shaman, and shaman in Korean is a mudang, my decision to ask a mudang if they could speak to my mother, in many ways was an expression of my utter longing to find any form of viable communication with someone I missed dearly. And I wouldn't rule it out, but I also am not sitting there thinking, yes, I'm channeling my mother here. I don't know. I think that I approach the experience with a skeptical, but also maybe possible, why not attitude. I wasn't approaching it with reverence. And yet at the same time, the ritual and the ceremony itself, it took a long time, like 6 to 8 hours. And at the very beginning, one of the mudangs experienced a moment where she felt she was able to channel my mother's voice. Was that real? Was it not? I don't know. It really is. As I said, in some ways, these ceremonies are for the living, right? However, I filmed it. And I know that when I was taking part in the ceremony, there was a large part of me that felt, I don't know if this is really like, what am I doing? Is this worth it? And I was very aware of the camera, of the production. I was like, oh, it's cold, it's raining. Like all of these thoughts are going through your head. I'm not sitting there in a trance, And what I found fascinating about the experience of working with the footage of the ceremony as a filmmaker is that the ceremony itself and the ritual became much more real to me once I was working with it in a narrative space where I could peel off parts of it and use it as a way to hold the other conversations and the other energies and the broader overarching narrative of the film. And then the ceremony itself became very powerful to me. And it's interesting because I think that oftentimes when I make documentaries, I'm always aware that, you're there and you're filming a scene or a moment, you're having a conversation with someone, and there's a super reality that becomes like activated in that moment, in that scene, in that conversation because you've filmed it. Because it's now media that you've documented, and then you're going to be working with it, and you're going to be editing it, and you're going to be isolating it and allowing a deeper focus onto it. And it becomes, I mean, all filmmaking is a manufactured narrative, and it is something that you, I think, try to approach with a certain kind of guideline of honesty of, what I determined to do with this footage. I have 100 hours, I'm making 90 minutes, is to be in relationship with a truth that has a singularity to it, but also has an accountability to it. So I'm speaking about that just to say it was interesting to me that the ceremony itself, it's very meaningful for many different people for lots of reasons. But for me specifically, it began as instinct. I've always been interested in mudangs. And it, turned into, okay, it's now a production shoot. I'm going to film it. And then working with the scenes in the film, it has like now just kind of elevated into something much deeper and richer for me in a like a storytelling way. It has so much more significance. So yeah, it's interesting how the ceremony holds a lot of value for me, more than necessarily, it was a ceremony to that it's a ritual that people go through. And I just want to say one more thing, like there is a ritual I've conducted and been part of my whole life called a chiesa that we do every year on the anniversary of my mother's death. And I've done that since I was 12, since, well, 13, since my mother died. And that ceremony has always been inflected with a lot of complicated, feelings and responses, and has been like a calendar in my life. And I also use that ceremony in the film to sort of punctuate the moments of the emotional journey. So I think in some ways, the film does like give you an opportunity to appreciate what ceremony does for us.
Thanks so much for talking with me.
Yeah.
Minsuk Lee's eye-opening documentary, There Are No Words, is having its world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies, each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.